Seekers, Mike Malloy here. How you doing? Hey, today was a glorious day for the Republicans, was it not? They have unveiled, or they did unveil today, their pledge to America. Did you watch the, and of course you didn't, nobody else did in the country either, not live, because some dork at the Republican National Committee or someplace, it was probably Michael Steele, scheduled the big announcement at a lumber company, or was it a hardware store, at the very same time the President of the United States was addressing the United Nations. Guess which one got television coverage? Ay, 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 ay. I saw some of the video, though. There was Boehner and the rest of them, and dear God in heaven, they had their jackets off. And no ties. Just like Ahmadinejad when he stood there at the UN. Well, he had his jacket on. But no tie. I mean, what's with the Republicans? They all want to be Iranians all of a sudden, right? We have our ties off. Oh, what does that mean? That means we're working hard. It was, remember during the horror that was Katrina and Michael Brown and George Bush and the rest of these termites were in New Orleans and that great big whatever the hell it was. And he said his famous line, "You're doing a hell of a heck of a job there, Brownie." I remember how the tape came out, the phone message or whatever it was, where somebody in FEMA, Brownie's office, had said to him, when you go out there with the president, take your coat off and roll up your sleeves if you can. But for God's sake, take your coat off. That speaks volumes about we're working. We'll get to it momentarily. Andrew in Chicago sent me an email. So much for pro-life, huh? He writes, Mike, if ever the total hypocrisy of the pro-life religious right was apparent, it is now. They are so vehement about protecting fetuses. Some even resort to violence and murder to do so. Yet so many are against the new health reform that would prevent insurance companies from denying coverage to children. Case in point, Sharon Angle, in Nevada, air quote, autism statement. They'll kill for a fetus, but as soon as the baby is born, it's going to be an economic burden. It can shrivel up and die for all they care. So much for pro-life. Particularly disturbing, too, was Mike Huckabee's comparison of people with pre-existing conditions in respect to health insurance to burned-out houses in respect to property insurance. Yeah, I saw that. That was astonishing. Andrew goes on, comparing people to property is only one step away from actually making them property. Though we all know that's what some of these southern white teabaggers want anyway. Anyone else smell 3/5 compromise version 2 coming? Andrew in Chicago. Yeah, well, the so-called pro-life stance of right-wingers has nothing to do with babies, nothing to do with zygotes, cell clusters, fetuses, nothing. The right-wing's focus on abortion has nothing to do with anything. None of this has anything to do with anything other than the utter and absolute control of women. And the denial of women to make decisions that they may want to make about their own bodies. That's what it's all about. Remember, who was it that, when we were talking about this, that wanted to, it was, Oh, I'll get to it in a minute. My head's spinning. My head is just spinning. All right. Let me see what we got here. The Pledge to America. Well, remember last night I tried to sign off an hour early. Oh, Lord, have mercy, mercy, mercy. Pledge to America, it's called. Very reminiscent, in a way, of Newt Gingrich's Contract on America from 94, when all the Republicans got together, the freshman class, they all got together, or was this, no, this was before the election, all the Republicans, House members, got together out on the steps of the Capitol, and they all had on their coats and ties, and Newt, the Commissar, stood there in front of a podium, going down the Contract on America, what was going to happen. And then Newt almost got indicted. They're all crazy. The other thing, they also scheduled their Pledge to America, in which they state categorically they're going to destroy what they call Obamacare, the health care reform. They're going to destroy it on the very day that it kicks in. The very day when all of a sudden there's no more donut hole for prescription drugs for Republic or for retirees, Medicare recipients to deal with. And that was put in there thanks to George Bush and the pharmaceutical industrial complex. There's no longer insurance companies can no longer deny health coverage to kids with pre-existing conditions. All sorts of things. They can't put a cap on your benefits. They can't tell you that breast exams and colonoscopies now you have to have a deductible or a copay. All of that disappeared today, on the very day that the Republicans stand out there and say, well, America, here's our pledge to you. We're going to get rid of all this crap. As Rachel Maddow said tonight, they also want to privatize the Veterans Administration, the VA hospitals, VA medical care, and Medicare and Social Security. As Rachel Maddow said a few minutes ago on the beginning of her program, if you want to find out whether or not veterans want these filthy, cowardly sons of bitches, these Republicans, to privatize the veterans' health care system? Just get a bunch of veterans. I don't care. Conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, doesn't matter. Get about 500 of them in a room. And then say, okay, guys, we're going to take away your Veterans Administration health benefits. And watch what happens. Or, try this. They want to privatize Medicare? Okay. Get 200 people in a room, 200 people on Medicare. Right-wingers, throw in some teabaggers. Left-wingers, Democrats, I don't care what they are. Get about 200 in a room. And then say to them, stand up and say, all right, old people, we're going to stop Medicare. And watch what happens. Huh? You stupid bastard right-wingers. Do you really believe that America wants that? Oh, my God. So on the day that all the reforms that were due to kick in do kick in, there's more to come. They're spread over years. And I think it would have been much easier, as I've made abundantly clear, to simply have single-payer health care in this country, and as do a lot of progressives, as do a lot of Americans. On the other hand, on the very day when the insurance companies have been told, now they're going to retaliate, of course the insurance companies are going to retaliate. What the hell? They're not going to roll over and stick their legs in the sky right now and say, oh, we're dead, we were killed by Obamacare. No, they're not going to do that. But on the very day that these reforms kick in that take away some of the power of life and death over these unconscionable capitalistic bastards, the other unconscionable capitalistic bastards led by John Boehner come out with their pledge to America. And part of the pledge is we're going to get rid of that dirty damn all those provisions about your kid can get health insurance now. Oh, no, because we're teabaggers. We're the Republican Party. You're not getting that. We're taking that back. I don't think so.
We'll be right back.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, tomorrow night is a rebroadcast night. Do you know what it's going to be, Catherine? You don't know. Okay. So the Democrats come out with their pledge to America. If you remember, I don't expect you to remember. The only reason I know is because I saw this earlier today. Back in 1994, when Newt Gingrich revealed his contract with America on the steps of the Capitol building, he stood there in his very Newt way. Newt has an image of himself that is like a colossus. I mean, he really does. He is one of an egocentric person without parallel. He really is. He used to think, I don't know what he thinks anymore because he's getting crazy. But he used to think that he had the answers to the saving of Western civilization. It was astonishing. But one of the things he said back then, standing on the steps with the geese behind him, and he said that the contract on America would be published that Friday or something in TV Guide, and that he wanted every American to tear out that page and, you know, tape it to their television or their bathtub or something. And he said, and I promise you that on January 3rd, whenever they were sworn in or whatever, he said, we, the Republicans, will also tear out that ad, and it'll be on the speaker's desk. And every day that we're in session, we will start by reciting what we promise in the contract on America. I mean, you talk about a mountain of bat squeeze and horse droppings. And here they're doing it again. Only this time it's called a pledge to America. A lot of pictures in there. I saw some video of it. Full page pictures. Very little words. As Molly would say, a lot of pictures, Daddy, not too many words. Oh, this will be easy. Right. That's the point. 21 pages. About 11 pages of pictures. Oh, my God, you can't take this stuff serious. No TV coverage at all. Because they scheduled it, like I said, when Obama was addressing the UN. Oh, well. They got all dramatic at this lumber and hardware store in Virginia. They got out of Washington to show the American public, we're going outside the Beltway, and when we do that, we take off our coats and we take off our ties so we look like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And we're going to stand down here at a lumber company. Well, we're going to sit. And we're going to talk all serious and hold up our booklet. And look at the pages. Look at the pretty pictures, huh? We pledge. They pledge to repeal the health care law and to continue all the Bush-era tax giveaways to wealthy people, as well as a couple of fish heads to the middle class. And they promise to significantly cut spending, but they never say what they're going to cut. Well, discretionary income. See, they would never touch the war budget, the murder budget. The murder budget is very, very, very important to Republicans because very few Republicans, if any, ever served in the military. So they don't understand what it's like to kill or be killed. What they do understand is how much money and kickbacks they get from the military-industrial complex. And the military-industrial complex pays these prostitutes, no offense to sex workers, quite well to stand there and do things like go to a hardware store in Virginia and talk about our pledge to America, we will never cut defense spending because everybody in the world wants to kill us. And we need lots of money for that. But goddamn these food stamp recipients. They're the ones that are breaking the country. Damn these little rugrats with their children's health insurance plans. Huh! What's that about? Damn these firemen and policemen. Always looking for federal grants because the country's bankrupt. We'll fix them. Vote for us, America. No taxes. No services, everything privatized, you're going to love it. We swear to God. And then you get a couple of these roaches in the back row.
Mr. Speaker-to-be, can we put our coats on? It's a little drafty back here. Hey,
sons of bitches. Well, when we come back from the break coming up, we will compare and contrast where it concerns how they're going to destroy Obamacare and what they're going to put in place of it. And I think you're going to find this rather funny. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
My goodness. In addition to everything else, I think we will have a report from Prairie 2, our economics affairs correspondent. Now, also a little bit later in the program, what Justice Antonin Fat Tony Scalia really thinks about really thinks about women's equality. Bungo! Hey, bungo! wait till we get to that. I think you'll find that amusing. So today, the Affordable Health Care Act kicked in today. The so-called Patients' Bill of Rights goes into effect, ending some of the worst abuses of the insurance industry and, you know, starting to put more of you and less of your insurance company in charge of whatever decisions you may have to make regarding health care. And again, does it go far enough? No, hell no. Should it be single payer? Hell yes. But let's just stipulate that what we've got is what we've got. And for a lot of people, it'll be a hell of a lot better than it has been. A hell of a lot better. No more discrimination against kids with pre-existing conditions. No more lifetime coverage limits. Young adults can now stay on their parents' plan until age 26. Free preventive care. immunizations, colonoscopies, mammograms, prenatal, baby care, without charging you any out-of-pocket cost. Freedom to choose your own doctor.
Where's the death panels?
Freedom to choose your own doctor. No more restrictions on emergency room care. We talked about that, I think, last night. And these are the things that Republicans came out today and said,
oh, no, America doesn't want that. America wants access to tanning booths like I have. America wants to be orange. None of this nonsense.
The Pledge to America, is that what it's called? Pledge to America, it starts out this way. The introduction.
We pledge to honor families, traditional marriage, life, and the private and faith-based organizations that form the core of our American values. Oh, horse hockey. The core of our American values, Boner, is give it to me. Give me the money. Show me the money. Show me the money.
Core of our American values being faith-based organizations. Oh, Jesus, God. Yeah, okay. That language was seen as an important concession to the freaks in this country who oppose gay marriage or a woman's right to privacy if she decides to have an abortion or not. Foremost in the plan is to continue the Bush-era tax giveaways that have bankrupted the country. They want the bankruptcy to continue, obviously, because a broke country is a country that will do anything. It's full of people who will work for $7 an hour. It's full of people who, because of malnutrition or whatever, don't have the energy to rise up and throw the son of a bitches out. So, yeah, you know, continue the Bush-era tax cuts. Pledge also says, we will help the economy by permanently stopping all tax increases. They're not tax increases. They're not. It's a return to the tax structure in the Clinton years. It's a tax regression. The fact that it takes the rates back to what they were is a reflection on the Republicans and the Bush crime family that put them in place to begin with. It was the Republicans who said, this is going to last for 10 years. At the end of 10 years, it's over. Why did they say that? Because they are lying sons of bitches. And half of them figured, hey, you know, I'll be in heaven by then. I won't have to face these irate voters. They're too stupid anyway. Guess what? Hasn't it been a lovely 10 years? So here we are. This is what the Republican, this is how the Republicans structured it. Why? To grease it up and insert it and hope that you'd never feel a thing. Except for the unintended consequence of all this, or maybe it was intended, I think it was intended, and that was the bankrupting of the United States. So when they talk about Obama's tax increases, they are once again lying sons of bitches. It was a lie to begin with. It's a lie now. It was Republicans. And I think Boehner was in office then. Boehner helped set this up. And now they say, well, we want to permanently stop all tax increases currently scheduled to take effect January 1, 2011. Why does it take effect January 1, 2011, you weasels? Because that's the way you wrote it. Nobody talks about that. I don't hear the political pundits on CNN or MSNBC talking about that salient fact. The plan also allows small business owners to take a tax deduction equal to 20% of their business income. What? Do you know what they consider a small business? Bechtel Company is one. That was at one time, the CEO of that one time was George, he was Secretary of Defense under Reagan. Who was that? Was it George? Schultz, yeah. Was he Secretary of Defense? Secretary of State? I don't know. It's hard to remember. But Bechtel is one of the largest construction companies in the history of the human race, right? The document promises big spending cuts, so it offers no specifics. No specifics. We need to stop spending so irrationally. Well, then, I'll tell you what. Take it from Mike Malloy. Here's all you have to do, Mr. Boner. You guys already voted not to fund our soldiers in the field. We have no military budget now, thanks to you pricks, right? Supposing this were done with a Democratic president or a Democratic threat to filibuster. The Defense Authorization Act that contained the Dream Plan to allow people to come to this country and get their citizenship by going off and fighting and bleeding and possibly dying for capitalist America. And the other part of it was, what was the other part? The Don't Ask, Don't Tell ending. So the Republicans, well, wait a minute. Matter of fact, I got an email about this. We're not an email here. This is from Radio Vegan Blogspot. They hate gay people and Hispanics so much, the Republicans, they vetoed a bill that would have funded the troops because an amendment to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, an amendment called the Dream Act, were part of the bill. And despite the majority of Americans favoring the end to institutionalized discrimination against patriotic American gays and lesbians in the armed forces, including the Joint Chiefs, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, regressives in Congress vetoed the bill today. So the Republicans have refused to fund America's fighting troops. They're out there, ladies and gentlemen, defending the flag and mom and auntie Susan and the children and the kindergartens and cherry pie. And the Republicans have cut off their funding. Let me see if I could put this in a manner that the Republicans would put it if the Democrats had done this. Our troops tonight are in harm's way in the mountains of Afghanistan. And we still have 50,000 troops in harm's way in the bloodletting that is Iraq. And what did the Democrats do today? They cut off the funding. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? No gas for their Humvees. So as they're driving across the plains of Afghanistan and they run out of gas and they have to sit there and all of a sudden RPGs come raining in and they're all killed because the Democrats today cut off their gasoline allowance. And you know what else? Our troops in Iraq, they won't be able to eat tonight. There's no food. There's no food. And tomorrow morning when they wake up hungry and cold and tired and they go to check their weapons and load up and lock and load because they have to go out and defend Auntie Susan, there won't be any bullets. This is what the Democrats have done today. I tell you, my fellow Americans, these people hate America. Now, that's just the minimal of what these roaches would do. But when they feel, look, we want to keep the queers out of the military, so we'll just defund everything. We'll just soldiers, smolgers, Humvees, scumbees, how about that? Nobody will notice. They're not going to talk about it on CNN or MSNBC. Maybe Radio Vegan Blogspot will talk about it, or that goddamn Mike Malloy, but that's all. So do it. Bungu.
Six crooked highways. Have stepped in the middle of seven side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall.
bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. The pledge to America unveiled at a lumber company in Virginia by the Republicans today, just as the president was addressing the UN, also promised to, this is what it said, quote, when asked to provide our troops with the resources they need, we will do so without delay, end quote. What did they do earlier this week? I mean, this is the insanity of these bastards. They voted the other day to not provide the resources the troops need. Now, the other thing they said, of course, the one thing they're really bearing down on, because they think they have a winner in the health reform, Health Insurance Reform Act. They think they have a winner because the teabaggers have been out there for 2 years talking about death panels and all this other hog snot. All right, get this. The agenda of the Pledge to America includes the repeal of all the benefits that went into effect today. They're going to repeal all that, as well as the entire health care law, and replace it with what they call, quote, reforms that lower costs for families and small businesses, increase access to affordable, high-quality care, and strengthen the doctor-patient relationship. What the hell does that mean? I mean, I've had the same internist for, what, 9 years? We have a great relationship. We have a great relationship. Huh? What?
It could be stronger.
How could it be stronger?
You guys don't pal around that much.
Well, if we went hunting together, maybe it'd be stronger. But they're gonna strengthen my doctor-patient relationship. Now, the document provides no specifics about what the party would do, the Republicans would do to control health care spending, improve the quality, or pay for the reforms. Of course not. Republicans say this stuff, and it doesn't mean anything. And the half-wits out there go, yep, they're going to strengthen my doctor-patient relationship, yep. I never get to see my doctor, I just get to see a PA or a nurse a practitioner. I never see the doctor, yep, I know he's in there. Oh, good, they're going to do that for me. And at least seven of the Republican ideas on health care, seven of the things they promise are already included in what has been passed by Congress. For example, insurance across state lines. The Affordable Health Care Act says it allows for the creation of state health insurance compacts, permits states to enter into agreements to allow for the sale of insurance across state lines. The Republicans pledged to America, we will allow individuals to buy health care coverage outside the state in which they live. High-risk insurance pools. The Affordable Care Act, it's already law, says the states and the federal government have already established the high-risk insurance pools to provide temporary coverage to individuals with pre-existing conditions until 2014. Because in 2014, all pre-existing conditions fall into the gutter. Here's what the Republican pledge to America. We will expand state high-risk pools, reinsurance programs, and reduce the cost of coverage. It's already part of the law, you dumbass. Here's three. Pre-existing conditions. The Affordable Health Care Act. Children cannot be denied coverage starting today, but beginning in 2014, insurers must accept everyone who applies. Republicans. We will make it illegal for an insurance company to deny coverage to someone with prior coverage on the basis of a pre-existing condition. But that's already the law, you dumbasses. Next, lifetime and annual caps. The Affordable Health Care Act, it's already law. A health insurer cannot impose lifetime limits and would be prohibited from placing annual limits on plans beginning in 2014. Republicans pledge to America, we'll eliminate annual and lifetime spending caps. But they're going to end the entire Affordable Care Act and replace it with the Affordable Care Act. Rescissions. The act says a health insurance issuer cannot rescind a policy except for cases of fraud. The Republicans say, we'll prevent insurers from dropping your coverage just because you get sick. That's already part of the law, you half-ass morons. State innovation. The Affordable Health Care Act says states can receive waivers from certain requirements if they can cover the uninsured and lower health costs in a more innovative manner. In other words, all these states that say, we're not going to be part of it. Okay, you don't have to be. You just have to do something that is equally cost effective. That's all. His Republicans say, we will incentivize states to develop innovative programs that lower premiums and reduce the number of uninsured Americans. Ooh, incentivize, innovate. But that's already part of the law. Next, conscience protections. The Affordable Health Care Act says the law does not affect existing conscience protections or discriminate on the basis of the willingness or refusal to provide, pay for, cover, or refer for abortion, or to provide or participate in training to provide abortion. In other words, the Affordable Health Care Act wimps out and says, no money for women who want to control their own bodies. Well, the Republicans say, we will enact into law conscience protections for health care providers, including doctors, nurses, and hospitals. But it's already part of the law, you half-witted morons. And this is how it goes. This is astonishing. Back in 94, a lot of us laughed at this dumbass Newt Gingrich with his contract on America. But this? The pledge to America? Right here? This? I mean, they're telling the bobbleheads out there, hey, Obama is from Kenya. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to do everything that's already been done, so vote for us. Huh? Vote for us. Yeah, yeah. Because we're crazier than loons.
Why are
As crazy as these Republican freaks are, and as much as they are under the absolute control of the teabag movement now, this stuff from Steve King, a Republican from Iowa representative, is amazingly suicidal. Roll Call reports Monday that King, Republican of Iowa, wants his party's leadership, that would be Boehner, to sign a blood oath. His words, blood oath. Well, what the hell are they going to do? Prick their arms and drop blood? He wants a blood oath that they will include a repeal of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, in every appropriations bill next year, even if it does lead to a government shutdown. I mean, this is madness. This is what Roll Call says. King said the problem in 1995 when the government shut down under Bill Clinton, that occurred after Republicans attached Medicare cuts and other items to spending bills, right? The government shut down. The problem was that Republicans, according to King, Republicans blinked when they feared the polls were turning against them. Oh, really? The polls? Let me see. That would be the people. So King says, quote, "We must not blink." He noted that money cannot be spent without the House voting to spend it. So he said, "We must not blink. If the House says no, it's no." And their new Tea Party owners won't tolerate anything less than a full repeal of the health care law, he said. Oh, my God. King added, referring to the baggers and the crazy sons of bitches that now comprise the base of the Republican Party, this is what he said, quote, "They will leave us if we go wobbly. I am worried about that. But that's why I think it's got to be a blood oath," end quote. Now, what is this freaky jerkwad? I mean, what does he mean a blood oath? That if they don't attach it to every appropriations bill, a repeal of the Affordable Health Care Act, what is a blood oath? Does that mean that they choose somebody from their caucus and push him out into the rotunda, the House rotunda, and then hand him a ceremonial short sword and he commits harakiri? He falls on his ceremonial sword? Is that a blood oath? What?
No, it means Michelle Bachmann and Christine O'Donnell drag out the satanic altar and
spilled
and prick themselves.
That's right. Didn't Michelle Bachmann? She's already pricked herself.
She wanted all Americans to take a blood oath to become blood brothers against Obamacare.
These people.
We will open our veins.
These people are madness. This is madness.
Didn't they do bloodletting back a few centuries? It didn't work out so well.
You know, Christine O'Donnell and her little claim of having seen a witch's altar. I mean, that's comedic relief. I mean, that's funny. But this Bachman and Steve King and the blood oaths and, oh, goddamn! I mean, they are insane. Tell me this is not madness. They're just insane. They're just insane. What? Well, can't hear you.
And they don't want anyone to have health insurance.
No, of course they don't. The Roll Call report, this is according to, who sent this to me? This is from Steve Bannon, Washington Monthly. The Roll Call report gets back to something that they've been covering for a while now. There's every reason to believe that John Boehner knows that another government shutdown would be a disaster, what it would do to his party, and that he'd be wise to avoid one. Don't do it, Boehner. He knows that. Boehner knows that. Boehner is all posturing. Boehner is all suntan and getting drunk every night. I mean, this guy has probably got the initial or intermediate stages of cirrhosis of the liver already. He's a drunk. He's not a dry drunk. He's an active, slosh it down, is it 4 o'clock yet, for Christ's sake, let me out of here, drunk! In addition to being, you know, the tan stuff. What is that? Man tan? No, that's from 50 years ago. Anyway, the Republicans are backing themselves into a corner. The House Minority Leader has already, that's Boehner, the House Minority Leader has already said scrapping the entire health reform law is his top priority. And Boehner's caucus, the Republicans, will expect follow-through. Boehner could pass a repeal bill in the House, but after it failed in the Senate or got vetoed, he would be able to say, "Well, we gave it a shot. Let's move on to other issues now. How do you like my tan?" But it's too late for that. Defunding the law is already far too popular within the Republican crazy asylum. There's an expectation that the fight has to happen. And now this little punk from Iowa, Steve King, is demanding a blood oath to ensure it does happen. What do you have in mind, Steve? A blood oath? What the hell are you talking about? This is not skull and bones. This is not some secret society, you crazy bastard. This is the governance of the United States. Are you people, you want a blood oath? Okay. Go ahead. Josh Marshall noted a couple of weeks ago, quote, when I first heard this talk of another government shutdown in 2011, I figured it was just Democrats whipping it up as a cudgel for the election. Then I heard Republicans talking about it, but I still figured it was just a way of ratcheting up their own core voters, who, of course, loved the first one, too. But those perceptions are changing, and for good reason. This really isn't manufactured drama. Much of the Republican Party is intent on making this happen. It's why talk of a shutdown is already being pushed by a House Republican leader. That is Representative Lynn Westmoreland of here in the buckle of the Bible Belt in Georgia, a Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller up in the Great Frozen North, a Republican House candidate Teresa Collette of Minnesota, and a variety prominent Republican voices. Newt Gingrich, Dick Morris, Newt Gingrich again. he wants to lead the Republican Party into another buzzsaw. Do it! Do it! You teasers, do it! Do what you're threatening to do. Please! On the other hand, voters should appreciate how serious this is before heading to the polls. What are the baggers going to do if the Republicans, let's say they pull this off, and the baggers wake up some morning and Papa Bagger stumbles out to the mailbox, and he looks, and there's no Social Security check. There's no Medicare check. What's he going to do? I've heard of stupid. I've heard of dumbasses. But these guys are what we call here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains butt-level stupid. Butt-level stupid. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, I have in front of me here, from the home office in Seattle, another... Jesus God, this is long. Another moment with Bob. And I also have a report from Prairie 2 somewhere in the pile. And also, I was going to get into this tonight, but there's something else I want to do the third hour about Fat Tony Scalia, who wants to end equality for women. This other thing I've got here is a list of evangelical Christian scandals, sex scandals, and it's rather it's rather lengthy. These are all prominent evangelicals. I show you the list. We may have to wait to get to this. Oh my God, we have to wait till Monday. This is really good. This is in light of the fact that here in the North Georgia area, Atlanta, to be specific. We just had another scandal break the other day, and that is, of course, Reverend Eddie Long, or Pastor or Bishop Eddie Long, who has been a virulent anti-gay leader in the black community, and now it turns out he's been boinking his boyfriends, and they have filed a suit against him. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, we're going to do a moment with Bob here at the bottom of the hour. This is from Prairie 2, Bruce Enberg, our economics affairs correspondent. His website is prairie2.com. This is what he writes. The subject line, there are things that you can only learn from Grandpa. From the New York Times today, quote, in the remarkable 90-minute meeting with Henry Kissinger playing MC, Mr. Gates, Bill Gates, and other heavyweight executives and economists from the West engaged Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiabao. He listened patiently and often volleyed back on topics including currency and trade policies, foreign investment, and whether China needed to improve the social safety net. Others in the circle, and literally a large ring of a few dozen chairs, included Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, Lord Blankfein, the Goldman Sachs chief, Joseph Stiglitz, winner of the Nobel in Economics, Kenneth Chenault, chairman and chief executive of American Express, and PepsiCo's chief executive, Indra Nooyi, end quote, New York Times. Prairie 2. Here's what really happened. Grandpa Wen, as he is known in China because he likes to play up his populist reputation by showing up at natural disasters and comforting the victims, Grandpa Wen had come to New York City to visit the United Nations. China might consider taking it in trade on a future deal. Billy Gates and some of the schoolyard boys were granted an audience with Grandpa to have the facts of life explained to them. It seems that when they go to play in China's playground, the kids there are mean to them and take their lunch money. Grandpa explained to them gently, that is just the way it is, and it wouldn't be fair to the Chinese business kids to make them give it back, so the exchange rate will pretty much stay the way it is. Little Bobby Rubin, who was clubhouse treasurer when Billy Clinton was president, and he came up with the idea for having no rules for the playground, he objected. He said, Bobby whined, the trade imbalances are unsustainable. He whined to Mr. Wen, Grandpa, urging China to restructure its economy away from exports and toward domestic consumption. And this trade imbalance is creating political problems in the United States. And little Bobby wiped his runny nose on his sleeve. Little Billy Gates chimed in again and asked Grandpa Wen why, with Billy's big new Microsoft research lab in China that lets only Chinese boys and girls play, why it was that this had not led to China respecting Billy's copyrights. Little Billy used to tell people there wouldn't be a trade deficit if China paid Microsoft license fees on all its software. Grandpa Wen just smiled and patted little Billy on the head, telling him what a good boy he'd been. Then the little kiddies ran out to play, where they bullied all the smaller American kids and took their lunch money to add to their billions. Grandpa Wen and old Uncle Henry had brandy and cigars while reminiscing about the good old days of the Cold War. The two old friends told stories as the cigar smoke filled the room with a haze, and they competed to see who had personally conducted the biggest massacre. A good time was had by all. PrairieNumeral2.com. That's pretty good, Bruce. You know, a lot of times your stuff is pretty dry. But this is a pretty good one, huh? You like that? Ah, Bruce is getting into that storyteller thing. Yeah, Wen Jiabao is in New York for the UN General Assembly meeting, at which today we had Barack Obama talking about capitalism and Ahmed Ahmadinejad talking about capitalism, only in a different way. And, of course, when Ahmadinejad, is that how you pronounce his name? When he suggested that the U.S. government was the Bush crime family, although he didn't use that term, I would have been thrilled if he had, that the Bush crime family had something to do with the attack on September 11, 2001. At that point, of course, the American delegation, all both of them, got up and walked out. The Israelis had already left. There weren't a whole lot of people there anyway. It was right over the lunch hour. So there he is, Ahmadinejad, giving his speech about the evils of capitalism. And, you know, it was hellish for me. I was sitting in the kitchen having my fourth cup of coffee and listening to Ahmadinejad going, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's pretty dangerous when you find yourself agreeing with somebody from the Middle East who is, but he's not going to be around long. He really isn't. The mullahs over there who really want it to be the Islamic Republic of Iran and get away from this westernization crap. They want to go back to beheading children and you know, Sharia law and all that. So I'm sorry. If you're a Muslim, I think you're crazy, just like I think Christians are crazy and Jews are crazy. Okay, I'm an equal opportunity, I think you're crazy kind of person where it comes to these crazy religions. But Ahmadinejad, I would say he'll probably be removed from office one way or the other. Let's see if I'm right within the next 6 months. And it won't be because of a nuclear strike at the Bushehr nuclear facility. We'll be right back. And will my soul be saved? Can you cleanse me up? Drive out the swine. Am I only falling, Father? Can you keep me safe from harm? The memories you build in the house on the hill, would you really change a thing? Correct. Before the hour. Regarding Steve King in Iowa, the Republican who wants the blood oath, Prairie 2 writes in, Steve King has to motivate the crazy base. Requests for absentee ballots in Iowa are running 3-1 for Democrats. Even if you added 100% of independent ballot requests to the Republicans, the Democrats are still ahead 2-1. Even Chuck Grassley is running TV ads touting his one-time membership in a labor union when he worked on an assembly line. Doubtless that factory is long gone to China. He also brags about taking on the health insurance companies, as if he voted for the health care bill. Yeah, I think there's going to be a surprise wrapped inside a surprise when these midterm elections occur. I really do. All right. Oh, one more. This is from Steve in Laverne, California. Mike, pledge to America is more like a pledge to plutocracy that these pirates have created. All they want are more tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans, more subsidies for corporations. In short, more socialism for capitalists. They want to continue to give more welfare to the military-industrial complex while they ignore the troops. It always seems that veterans suffer under Republican administrations. Meanwhile, these reprehensible Republicans in Congress who have medical care thanks to the taxpayers scream, Obamacare equals socialized medicine. Yeah, they want to leave any sort of health care to the insurance companies, which are no more than legalized extortionists. The Republicans are plutocrats. They are the gatekeepers for this fascist fiefdom that they've created. These Tea Party Republicans have a pre-existing condition themselves. They have no brains or hearts. Steve, Laverne, California. It's time, once again, for... Listen. My goodness. I thought we shot that guy. I thought we took that ukulele player out. It's time once again for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. The title of tonight's epistle, Dead Ahead. Hey, Mike, one of my favorite films about aliens invading the Earth is John Carpenter's They Live. The aliens strip the Earth of its resources and accelerate global climate change to change Earth's environment to that of their home planet. Some humans collaborate with the aliens and are rewarded for their betrayal with money and positions of power. My all-time favorite film about aliens transforming the planet isn't science fiction. It's the recent documentary Gasland. The film is about what happens to the people, communities, and the environment when natural gas is obtained by a stimulation method known as hydraulic fracturing. Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, is a means of natural gas extraction employed in deep natural gas well drilling. Once a well is drilled, millions of gallons of water, sand, and a mixture of 596 different chemicals, many of them toxic, are injected under high pressure into the well. The pressure fractures the shale and props open fissures that enable natural gas to flow more freely out of the well. Generally, 1 to 8 million gallons of water may be used to frack a well. A well may be fracked up to 18 times. For each frack, 80 to 300 tons of chemicals may be used. Currently, the natural gas industry does not have to disclose the chemicals used, but scientists have identified volatile organic compounds such as benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene. Many of the chemicals in the proprietary fracking fluids are carcinogens, and once they are forced into the shale, not all come back home. By 2007, there were 449,000 natural gas wells in 32 U.S. states, an increase of more than 30% since 2000, with serious episodes of groundwater contamination near drilling sites. The average well is up to 8,000 feet deep. The depth of drinking water aquifers is about 1,000 feet. The wall casings leak natural gas as well as fracking fluids into the water wells. In 1974, the Safe Drinking Water Act was passed by Congress to ensure clean drinking water free from both natural and man-made contaminants. In 2005, the Bush-Cheney Energy Bill exempted natural gas drilling from the Safe Drinking Water Act. It exempts companies from disclosing the chemicals used during hydraulic fracturing. Essentially, the provision took the EPA off the job. It is now commonly referred to as the Halliburton loophole. Fracking taints water sources near drilling sites, and many households have discovered their water is not only undrinkable after gas drilling, it is even flammable. It turns out this is just the tip of the iceberg of the environmental damage done by the gas drilling. The fracking now taking place is headed for towns in upstate New York, including the Catskills. Some of the drilling could take place near the reservoirs and tunnels that provide drinking water to 9 million New Yorkers. The boom in natural gas drilling is contaminating America's water supply. Fracking is not just about water pollution. The air pollution is devastating. From the website environment.change.org. Nosebleeds and rashes plague fracking town, fracking boom town. Quote, meet Lisa Parr. First she thought she had the flu. Next she developed severe rashes, tremors, memory loss, and lost her ability to walk. More than a year and eight doctors later, they finally diagnosed her with environmental poisoning. Neurotoxins were present in her blood, the same present in natural gas production, as tests by the State Environmental Department confirmed. Ms. Parr wasn't the only one affected. Her husband and daughter both suffered chronic nosebleeds, rashes, respiratory problems, as the Wise County Messenger newspaper reports. The Barnett Shale region around Texas is full of similar cases of air and water contamination related to natural gas drilling. A local land assessor now depreciates appraised values 75% when a gas well is on the land, end quote. But what about global climate change, Bob writes? Isn't natural gas supposed to be cleaner than oil or coal? A preliminary paper by Robert Howarth, a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Cornell University, raises huge questions about how clean natural gas is when total emissions are considered. Howarth comes to the staggering conclusion that, quote, when the total emissions of greenhouse gases are considered, fracturing obtained natural gas and coal from mountaintop removal probably have similar releases. And in fact, the natural gas may be worse in terms of consequences on global warming. End quote. Howarth argues that greenhouse gas emissions from gas from fracturing are estimated to be 60% more than for diesel fuel and gasoline. The corporations supplying the current and future energy needs of the United States are poisoning our air, land, and water. Obtaining natural gas by using fracking methods is literally threatening our entire nation's water supply. Get it? Not just over here and some over there in that state, but the entire nation's water supply. After watching Gasland, I could only come to this conclusion. The people running the oil and natural gas industry and their bought and paid for politicians and lobbyists are either criminally insane, you know, crazy stupid people, or they're aliens.
11 out of 10 sane people, that's right, 11 out of 10 sane people agree, we can't breathe the toxic plumes of ethane, pentane, hexane, octane, xylene, and nonane venting from frack storage tanks. We can't grow our food in land steeped in poisonous chemicals. We can't irrigate crops using water contaminated with carcinogens. We can't drink water that is flammable. Well, human beings can't, but aliens from a galaxy far, far away might relish a flaming glass of toluene after a brisk jog through a methane cloud. But let's assume, for sanity's sake, mine in particular, that the people involved in the oil and natural gas industry and their minions are human beings. Look at what they're doing. They're wrecking the nation's water supply for money! They don't seem to realize they have to live here, too. That's why they're crazy, stupid people. The kicker is that these people, though suffering a psychotic break from reality, own the asylum. It's going to be awfully hard talking them out of their offices, down the hall, into the recreation room, in time for medication and group therapy. Stephen King published his 8-pound apocalyptic thriller, The Stand, in 1978. I always liked one of the minor characters, the guy wearing one of those repent the end is near sandwich boards. King called him the monster shouter because he stood on street corners and yelled, "There are monsters coming! Monsters in the cities! Monsters in the suburbs! Monsters in the countryside!" I try to get a little of that in every day before picking up my little boy from school. The pay's not very good, but at least the hours are flexible. Regards, Bob. Another in a truly unending series of Moments with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Don't forget, coming up after the break, a very strange letter from a former listener. He says he's a former listener. Also, what Fat Tony Scalia, Supreme Court Associate Supreme Court Justice, well, his full name is Anthony Fat Tony Scalia, what he thinks of women's... women's participating in the equal protection amendment to the Constitution. More fun and frivolity, another hour coming up, so stick around. TomDispatch.com, are you familiar with that? Tom Englehart, who is... That's his website, and he Tom Dispatch has come up with some very, very, very interesting pieces. He sent out an email to a bunch of people today. He has a new book out called The American Way of War: How Bush's Wars Became Obama's. And maybe we'll get him on, but I want to share with you what he said in his email. He said, "Here's the good news. U.S. troops in Afghanistan are coming home, whether Washington wants them to or not." whether there's an anti-war movement or not. It's going to happen more quickly than anyone in our capital imagines. Right now, Washington officials act as if the decline of U.S. power is some mild, decades-long process to be managed, the sort of thing that might lead to a significant diminution of American power by perhaps 2025. Americans viscerally know otherwise. They, not their children or grandchildren, Americans now, are experiencing that decline in the flesh right now and are increasingly ready for an American world in which we don't fight distant wars, we don't garrison in strange lands, in which we expend our treasure repairing our own world rather than killing and dying far from home. These two realities, the Washington elites and the publics, are the subject of my latest book, A Unique Argument for Why We Should Welcome American Decline, and why, no matter what Secretary of Defense Gates or Afghan War Commander Petraeus may think, American troops will not be in Afghanistan 9 or 10 years from now. I conclude this out of the ordinary book or look at how quickly the American century is ending on this optimistic note. It's actually going to feel better to be just another nation, one more country, even if a large and powerful one on this overcrowded planet, rather than the nation. It's going to feel better to only arm ourselves to defend our actual borders, rather than constantly fighting distant wars or skirmishes and endlessly preparing for more of the same. It's going to feel better to focus on American problems, maybe experiment a little at home and offer the world some real models for a difficult future instead of talking incessantly about what a model we are while we bomb and torture and assassinate abroad with impunity. So take some pleasure in this. Our troops are coming home, and you're going to see it happen. Since by the time we get anywhere near such a world, our leaders will have run this country into the ground, it's hard to offer the traditional three cheers for such a future. But how about at least 1.5 prospective cheers for the possible return of perspective to our American world? And thank you, George W. Bush, though I never thought I'd say that. Thank you. You've given an old guy a shot at seeing the fruits of American decline myself. I'm looking forward. Warm regards, Tom. TomDispatch.com. Go there, TomDispatch.com. You know, one of the things I've never talked about, and I think Monday we'll try to get into, Sheila sent me this incredibly bizarre, strange, scary, horrifying, frightening article that came from the Christian Science Monitor, not from some, you know, crazed, freaked out internet discussion group, but from the Christian Science Monitor. And she said, when she sent it, she said, when I first read this, I was horrified. I read it again, and the horror intensified. I became terrified. So come Monday, I'm going to bring this up. I wanted to do it this week. I was going to do it tomorrow night, but something has come up, and we cannot do the program live tomorrow night. It'll be a rebroadcast. But it's just an astonishing article. I'll give you one little teaser. It's about Stuxnet. Stuxnet. Okay, go ahead. Look it up. Google it. Stuxnet. 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 We'll get to that Monday. Because coming up next hour, I have this thing about Antonin Fat Tony Scalia. And also, we have some sound for you from January 1960. How long does that run? About 2 minutes, 30 seconds? About 2.5 minutes? I want you to hear that. And this email from a guy who has been listening forever and really likes the program. But because I talked about Harley Davidson last week, he winds up telling me he's never going to listen again, and he uses the F-bomb. F you! I want you to hear it. All right. All right, stick around. Start the music, Miss Gabby. Oh, you can't. That's right. It's automatic. There it goes. Yeehaw. All right, stick around. I'm going to go get a cheese sandwich and a glass of Merlot. We'll be back momentarily. I'm Mike Malloy. My head is still kind of dinging around from the exquisite timing of the Republicans today when they had their big pressure on their new contract on America at the same time Obama is addressing the UN. Oh, my God. Oh, well. It never ceases to intrigue me, if not amaze me, in this talk radio business, how quickly and abruptly people who claim to be fans can turn and want to cut my throat. Now, I've talked to other people. I don't have a lot of contact with people in talk radio, just when we get together for these cattle calls at the various radio stations, which are a lot of fun, you know, not to diminish them, but because I really enjoy going around the country. I mean, what the hell? The radio stations always pay for everything, so what's not to enjoy, right? But you meet people at these events, other talk show hosts, or not you, I meet people that I normally don't have any contact with, whether it's Tom Hartman or Ron Reagan or Randy Rhodes or whoever, Stephanie, of course, Stephanie Miller. And sometimes we'll sit back in the so-called green room while we're waiting to go out and do the event, and we'll talk about some, you know, similar experiences that we have. And one of the things that always is intriguing when we're sitting backstage and telling these stories are the stories about how quickly someone or a bunch of someones who the talk show host presumes to be a fan because, and I mean fan in a humble way, just somebody who listens to the program. I don't think any of us on the left have any, you know, crazed Jim Jones style arrangements like Beck does or like Limbaugh does. Limbaugh and Beck have fans who would probably slaughter their firstborn child if Beck demanded it or Limbaugh demanded it. We on the left don't have any nutballs like that. And Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of these right-wing thugs have hundreds of thousands of people who would slaughter their own children if asked to or ordered to. It's really crazy. But what we on the left do have, we have fans of a different sort who never, ever, ever agree with us 100% as the people on the right. The people on the right agree with the talk show hosts on the right 100% because the people on the right are brain dead and they need somebody to jerk them around. Someone to say, turn left, turn right, go here, sit down, stand up, go to the bathroom, wipe your nose. People on the left don't need that. So even though we do have supporters and fans, talk show hosts on the left don't have the crazy people. Or do we? Sometimes we come up with just one or two. And that's what we, Stephanie and I have talked about it. Hartman and I have talked about it. Reagan and I have talked about it. And I've got an example for you here that I want to share with you. I'm just going to read this guy's email. And he didn't tell me not to, so I'm going to give his name. It's Pete from Oklahoma City. I think he's a truck driver. And this is what he writes. The subject line says, longtime listener slash mad as hell. When I first saw the subject line, I thought, oh, he's pissed off at the Republicans. No. Let me just give you a little bit of a setup here, a little bit of background. Remember, what was it, last week or a week or so ago when I talked about the strike at Harley-Davidson in Wisconsin? Was it Wisconsin or Minnesota? I don't know. And what the Harley Davidson company was trying to do to their buyer or their workers. And I made reference to Harley riders up here in the North Georgia mountains. And I stand by the reference that I made that they're all 95% of them are grossly obese and overweight. Their old ladies are just ugly as doorstops. And most of them ride with no helmets. And I appreciate that because there's a lot of people waiting for organ donations. A lot of people waiting for body parts. And the quickest way to get a pretty good body part in pretty good shape is some idiot that rides a motorcycle with no helmet. And usually smoking a cigarette. So you get a twofer there. But anyway, I went off on that. And I did what I consider to be humor. I'm not very good at humor. I'm not a comic. But I did parody. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll go after certain groups, usually white people, because I'm white, in the same way that Richard Pryor went after black people, or Larry David goes after the foibles of wealthy, brain-dead white people, or, the comics that go after their own people. Chris Rock does the same thing, although Chris Rock will go after white people, too. So that's what I was doing. And this is the response I get from this one listener. Mike, I write this as a longtime devotee of your show. My wife and I are podcast subscribers, and until last week, both regular listeners. We go back to the early days when you were followed by Peter Werby on Sirius. You are responsible for the best 15 minutes of radio I've ever heard, the soliloquy to the experience of the, quote, old black lady, end quote, who goes to the bus stop early in the morning with a brown grocery sack. She cleans and cooks and changes the dirty diapers for the white folks, then rides that bus home to take care of her own family. Such a poignant description could only be voiced by one who I considered a kindred spirit. Last week, you discussed the labor versus management issue at Harley-Davidson. I was looking forward to hearing your take on this, as I've been following the dirty dealings of the motor company against the employees for some time. I'm also a proud rider and builder of several of these machines for the past 30 years. Never went to the dealer and forked over 20 grand for a new one. Always collected parts to assemble nice bikes. You'll notice what's going on here. Your rant against how I choose to spend the limited time my wife and I aren't pushing this 18-wheeler down the highway was an unexpected kick in the gonads. Categorizing an entire group based on a limited sample is always wrong. Many of the hooded Klan members you saw drive Ford pickups with rifle racks or enjoy a taste of Jack Black after they remove their white sheets. Should these similarities to your preferences lead me to assume you are sympathetic to that group of haters and bigots? My wearing a helmet or not is none of your business. I have a Blue Cross Blue Shield card in my wallet, so you and the teabaggers won't have to pay to get my brains scraped off the pavement with a stick and a spoon. Besides, my wife gets $500,000 if I die to buy your tote bags and T-shirts to support your show. Thanks for 7 years of good times. Whether or not you reply to this missive, F you!
And he's got that part in, what is that, 18-point caps. Signed, Pete Kunkel, Oklahoma City. P.S. I went to a Dylan concert recently, and there were 50 Harleys in the parking lot. Must have been all Jews. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does it mean, Kathy? Come on. Thanks for 7 years of good times. So then you reply to this missive, F you! Am I wearing a helmet or not is none of your business. I never said it was, Pete. I said I appreciate people like you. You kind of missed the point, apparently. I think riding a Harley and not wearing a helmet is a wonderful idea for people who are interested in providing body parts to people, other people are desperately in need of them. So keep doing it. Well, what's the problem? Anyway, so we lose two more listeners. I think he'll be back, though. He just had to vent and scream out an F-U, which is cool. But he'll be back. And if he's not back, Pete, drive safe. Keep it lit. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I've got a little piece of sound I'm going to play here in a couple of minutes from Eisenhower. He was a president when I was alive. Yeah. That would be Dwight Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander. And in World War II and the invasion of Normandy, President of the United States for 8 years. As a matter of fact, we have time to... How long does it run? 2 minutes? All right, well, let me give you the setup here, and we'll go ahead and play it now. This is from Ron, Fort Wayne. I've been sitting here pondering something you might find interesting. In January 1960, prior to leaving office, Eisenhower gave his farewell speech to the nation, warning us to beware of the military-industrial complex. He said, it exists and will persist. In my opinion, Ike was the last decent Republican president this nation has had. Were this man alive today, this group of nuts comprising the Republican Party would toss him to the wolves. The Sponge Klein themselves, the Tea Party, are undoubtedly insane. Should they come to power, they will have in their arsenal enough nuclear power to knock the Earth off its axis. They are freaks that are hateful, uneducated, devoid of compassion, and suffer from the all-about-me syndrome. They must be kept from assuming power at any level of government, which means that we on the left are going to have to close ranks and play smash-mouth hardball with them if that's what they want to do. They used the tactics of intimidation, bullying, and thuggery in 2000 and got away with it. It is my belief they'll try it again. Bring them on. Ron and Fort Wayne. Let me play a little excerpt for you from Eisenhower's farewell speech in January 1960.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Pretty astonishing, huh? Beware the rise of misplaced power. The military-industrial complex. The warnings and predictions that came out of Eisenhower's mouth 50 years ago, 1960, were ignored. They were ignored by the ruling class. They were, as a matter of fact, they were turned on its ass by the ruling class. The ruling class had a tremendous amount invested in building exactly the kind of economic structure that Eisenhower warned against. And so here we are today. And it's true what Ron of Fort Wayne wrote. If Eisenhower were alive today and trying to run for office, the teabaggers would kill him, as they killed Kennedy. Shortly after, 3 years after, three and a half, well, almost 4 years after, Eisenhower issued this warning, the military-industrial complex decided to take its boldest step and executed a president, assassinated a president, because that president had decided not to do what the military, capitalist, corporate, industrial structure wanted him to do. At least not on the terms they insisted on. So Kennedy was murdered. And now, thanks to the rise of the Tea Party movement, the teabaggers, and the corporatization of our political class, the entire country is about to be murdered.
I'm walking down the street like Lucky LaRue. Got my hand in my pocket, thinking about you. I ain't a hurting nobody. I ain't a hurting no one. There's 300 men in the state of Tennessee. They're waiting to die. They won't never be free. I ain't hurting nobody. I ain't hurting no one.
Do you know why?
It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. I don't think, other than Clarence Thomas, I don't believe, my opinion only, there's a bigger hack, a phony, a religious bigot on the court, bigger than Antonin Fat Tony Scalia. This guy is a real, real piece of work, Scalia. He's an Opus Dei Catholic, which means he believes in the utter and absolute power and authority of the papacy. He believes that if you are not of his class economically, educationally, and nationality, you should shut up, sit down. Your reward will come, if you're a good Catholic, after you're dead. Scalia is the worst type of person to have on any country's Supreme Court, much less ours. But there he squats, this huge toad-like man who is determined to impose religious law on the United States. We don't have to worry about, as Newt Gingrich wants us to worry about, Sharia law or Islamic law, as long as Fat Tony sits on the Supreme Court. We have, or he will make every attempt to put in place, Catholic law. The latest? Scalia is convinced the Constitution does not offer equal protection under the law to women. Oh, Kathy's looking at me like, what? He doesn't believe the Constitution bars sex discrimination. Now, Adam Cohen, writing Time Online. By the way, Cohen is a former Time writer, former member of the New York Times editorial board. He has a book out, Case Study. He has a legal column for Time.com. It comes out every Wednesday, called Case Study, which is where I got this yesterday. Anyway, as Cohen points out, even though the Supreme Court has said for decades that the Equal Protection Clause protects women, and for that matter, protects men, protects everybody from sex discrimination, Scalia claimed last week that women's equality is entirely up to the political branches of government, not the judicial, but the political. He said, he told an audience at the University of California's Hastings College of Law, quote, if the current society wants to outlaw discrimination by sex, you have legislatures, end quote. Jesus, God, and he's a Supreme Court justice. Now, as Cohen points out, to anyone who's followed Scalia's career, this latest half-ass statement should not, these are not Cohen's words, these are mine. This latest half-ass statement, Cohen said provocative, I'll say half-ass statement, shouldn't come entirely as a surprise. It's been more than 4 years. You remember this? He answered a reporter's question about how could he, Scalia, be impartial in religious cases, since he, Scalia, was this ultra a conservative, Christ on the cross, Opus Dei, let's impose Vatican law in the United States, Catholic. And he was asked, a reporter said, well, how can you make rulings on religious issues and display the kind of impartiality necessary to be a Supreme Court justice? You know how he answered? He gave him there's this under-the-chin hand gesture. It's a Sicilian obscenity. My grandfather... Yeah, right. That's it, Kathy. It's as bad in Sicilian society as the middle finger is in here, for example. It's an old expression. It's fungu, you know, kind of that. If you're familiar with what I'm talking about. So a Supreme Court justice gives a reporter that hand gesture. This is the freak we're talking about here, Scalia. Now, when that happened, a spokeswoman for the Supreme Court insisted the gesture was dismissive, but not obscene. Oh, my God. Well, when you're a mega Catholic, right wing, the Jews are still responsible for the execution of Jesus. When you're that kind of a Catholic and you're a Supreme Court justice, it doesn't make any difference what kind of a gesture you use. You are going to have some subservient female, in this case, a spokeswoman for the Supreme Court, say, no, 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 no. That's a not, that's a not. No, it's not obscene. That was a dismissive. You're going to get that. And that's what we got. So anyway, it's been about as long since Scalia called his refusal to recuse himself from a case about Cheney's Energy Task Force. Remember that? He had just gone duck hunting
with Cheney. And the question came up, would he recuse himself from a case about Cheney's Energy Task Force? He said no. And then later he said it was the proudest thing he had ever done on the court. Ruling that executive privilege allowed Dick Cheney to sit down with corporate capitalist executives in the energy business and decide what American policy was going to be, with no input from the public, no input from environmentalist groups, no input from energy conservationists. And Scalia's attitude on that, hey, fungu, ah, all right, you don't like it? Too bad, eh? But Scalia's attack on the constitutional rights of women, and let's not stop there. The 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Amendment that Scalia insists was only put in place to guarantee the rights of the freed slaves, the constitutional rights of women and gays, who he also hates. He has to. He's a Catholic. But I would be careful. I would question his overt hatred and dismissal of gays, because in so many instances, i.e. Eddie Long, the Reverend Eddie Long here in Atlanta with a 25,000-member congregation, or a whole list of people, oh, those goddamn gays! And then it turns out that they are closeted themselves and are desperately afraid of being truthful to themselves. The rest of the world can, you know, flake off. Just be honest and truthful to yourself. So I would be a little bit suspicious of Scalia's ardent opposition to gay folk. But this attack on women, the constitutional rights of women, is not just his usual mouthing off. According to Adam Cohen, one of Scalia's colleagues on the nation's highest court, Justice Stephen Breyer, has just come out with a book called Making Our Democracy Work, A Judge's View. And this book argues that the Constitution is a living document, one that the founders intended to grow over time, to keep up with new events. Scalia is a great defender of the concept of originalism regarding the Constitution. In other words, Scalia believes that the Constitution, which was written in the latter part of the 18th century, should remain as it and interpreted as it was written. Therefore, women don't have the right to vote. Black people are 3/5 of a human being. And gays, they don't even exist. Jews, well, see above, they're Christ killers. This is Fat Tony Scalia's attitude. And if you question him about it, if you have the audacity to question this imperial freak about this kind of stuff, he gives you this, fungo! Hey, fungo! Okay? Get out of my face! Now, I can do that because I'm Italian, so don't any of you you sons of Italy, write me a letter and say, hey, how dare you talk, live with that kind of dialect? Because to you I will say, fungo! The idea that women are protected by the Equal Protection Clause is not a new idea. It's not controversial. In 1971, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that women are protected in an opinion written by the conservative then Chief Justice Warren Burger. As Adam Cohen says, it is no small thing to talk about writing women out of equal protection, or writing Jews out of equal protection, or Latinos out of equal protection, or other groups who would lose their protection by the same logic that Scalia, or lack of logic, that Scalia is trying to apply here. Hey, the Constitution doesn't say women have equal rights. Fungu! Get out of my face with this. Really? Anyway, as Cohen says, it is nice to think that legislatures would protect these minorities from oppression by the majority, but we have a very different country when the Constitution guarantees that that's the case. But to Scalia, eh, what are you talking? Fungo! Get out of my face with this stuff! Women, what do you mean? Next thing you want to make them priests, right? Get out of here! The fact that we have a very different country now from the days of the Founding Fathers is why Scalia, once again, is on the wrong side of the debate. He's been spending way too much time doing his rosary, apparently. The drafters could have written the Constitution as a list of specific rules and said, that's all, folks. Instead, they wrote a document full of broadly written guarantees like due process, freedom of speech, equal protection. Eh? I'll have more of this when we come back. Don't go away. All right. All right. Scalia, associate member of the United States Supreme Court, associate justice of the United States Supreme Court, has decided that there is no constitutional guarantee against sex constitutional guarantee in favor of equality for women. He says there is no nothing in the Constitution to bar sex discrimination, and if you want it in there, go talk to your legislatures. This from an ultra-right-wing Catholic who still believes the Jews are responsible for the death of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This to me is astonishing. When you stop and think, there are 8 Supreme Court justices. 6 of them are Catholic. 6 of them. Is it 8? 8 Supreme Court? Yeah, or is it 9? Is it 9? Yeah, it has to be. That's right. What am I talking about? All right, 7 of them are Catholic and 2 are Jews. Isn't that the makeup right now? Jesus, Marge, he doesn't even know how many Supreme Court justices are on the bench. Well, he's a liberal. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes explained almost a century ago that the Constitution's framers considered or created what Holmes called an organism that was meant to grow and to be interpreted, as Holmes put it, quote, in the light of our whole national experience and not based on what was said 100 years ago, end quote. And when he said it at the time, it was 100 years out from the framing of the Constitution. So, of course, it wasn't until 1920 that women got the right to vote, just about the same time that everybody lost the right to drink. So women got the right to vote in 1920. That was, 90 years ago. That's it. There are women alive today who, when they were kids, women couldn't vote. My mother was 5 years old. She's dead now, but she was 5 years old when women got the right to vote. Scalia questions the whole concept of women's equality. How do you feel about that, ladies? Huh? Now, Scalia doesn't even have consistency on his side. Scalia is a right-wing nutball who has as much business on the Supreme Court as your crazy Aunt Franny does. He has been happy to interpret the Equal Protection Clause broadly when it fits his purposes, as in Bush v. Gore. Back in 2000, he joined the majority that stopped the vote recount in Florida and gave us 8 years of horror with Bush and Cheney. Because, Scalia said, the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution required it that they stop counting the votes. Why?
Well, he believed, and I question if there's any reason, really, to believe that the drafters of the Constitution intended to protect Bush's right to have the same procedures for a vote recount in Broward County as he had in Miami-Dade. And that was the point with Scalia and the other four justices who ruled 5-4 that the vote counting had to stop because the same procedures were not being applied in these different jurisdictions. Now, if Scalia would have been an equal protection originalist in that case, he would have focused on the many black Floridians whose votes were not counted, not on the white waiting president who wanted to stop counting votes. But Scalia is an Opus Dei Catholic. Scalia is a hard right capitalist, corporatist. Even worse, when Scalia argues for writing women out of the Constitution, that's bad enough. But there's another group that he's been working hard to write into the Constitution. 3, 2, 1. That's right, corporations! The word corporation doesn't even appear in the Constitution. And there's considerable evidence, the writings of Jefferson, the writings of so many of the original framers, that they were worried back then about the influence of corporations. So what does Fat Tony do? In a landmark ruling earlier this year, Scalia joined this narrow majority in striking down longstanding limits on corporate spending in federal elections, insisting that those limits violated the First Amendment. Now, it's a strange view of the Constitution to say that when it says every person must have equal protection, it does not protect women. But that freedom of speech guarantees corporations the right to spend unlimited amounts of money to destroy the electoral process in this country. Thanks to Adam Cohen, former Time writer and former member of the New York Times editorial board. He has a legal column at time.com every Wednesday titled Case Study. You should read Adam Cohen. Fat Tony Scalia. It never fails to knock the wind out of me to run across information like that provided by Adam Cohen in his column yesterday at time.com. Run across information that clearly, unequivocally demonstrates the hard right, neo-fascist attitude, anti-woman attitude, anti-gay attitude, anti-Jew attitude, anti-Protestant attitude, anti-everything attitude that you will find, with the exception, of course, of whatever the Pope intones, you will find in every single Opus Dei Catholic. And to have one sitting as an associate justice, and I don't know about Sammy the Fish Alito, who knows about his predisposition to Opus Dei, but Fat Tony Scalia, self-described Opus Dei Catholic. Beware, beware, beware. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Dominus vobiscum.